This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Vermont has one landfill in Coventry. It's where most of the state's trash ends up, from the food containers and old packaging that you toss out at home to all that debris from last summer's flooding. The landfill is owned by Casella Waste Systems, which I should note is a Vermont Public business sponsor. A few weeks ago, there was a spill at the landfill that's raised alarms for environmental groups and some Coventry locals. It had to do with a pilot project to treat runoff called leachate, which is full of toxic chemicals called PFAS. Many states are developing plans to remove PFAS so they don't end up in our water and our bodies. Today on the show, we are going to look at what happened at the landfill and learn more about these treatment systems that are under development. We're joined first today by John Casella, the CEO of Casella Waste Systems. John, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us. And we also have on the line Matt Chapman, the Director of Waste Management and Prevention at the Vermont Department of Environmental Regulation. Matt, welcome.
Good afternoon. Thanks.
John, I just gave a very broad strokes overview of this leak that happened at the landfill. Tell us more. What happened?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, I wouldn't characterize it that way. I think that the pretreatment system that we have has been operating for about 7 months. And the pretreatment system is processing leachate to pull out the PFAS constituents that are in leachate and actually in a lot of industrial waste that goes into our municipal sewage treatment facility. So our pretreatment facility has processed about 7 million gallons over that period of time. There was a malfunction of parts of the equipment. That malfunction caused a spill, and the spill was mostly in the containment, the primary containment area, and then some of it went to a secondary containment area, but none of it left site. It was cleaned up within, you know, hours of the facility realizing that there was an issue with the equipment, and there was, you know, nothing, as I said, nothing left the site. And I think that it's really important to understand that when you think about what we're doing, we're one of four or five facilities around the country that's actually pre-treating leachate, which is a problem for hundreds of landfills, for all of our municipal sewage treatment facilities. And the results that we've had is, you know, a very significant removal of PFAS from the leachate, and it's been very successful. Yes, it's unacceptable to have the problem and to have the problem with it, but part of what we're doing is establishing what that technology is going to look like. What do we need to do to make sure that it's, you know, ultimately safe for the environment as well? And I think that there's always risks associated with innovation and technology. And quite frankly, we're really proud of the work that our people have done. Not only the 7 million gallons that's been treated successfully, but also their reaction and the work that they did to make sure that there wasn't something that went off site.
And just some numbers here, about just under 9,000 gallons of leachate spilled. As you mentioned, John, 2/3 of that was caught in a liner, and just under 3,000 gallons spilled into a nearby stormwater pond, which, again, as you said, was the
secondary containment. Yes.
Okay. Yep.
You know, all of which was cleaned up immediately. Any of the soil that was touched, all of that was taken care of. As I said, the team did a great job, reacted very quickly, and made sure that there wasn't anything off-site.
Yeah. And Matt Chapman, with the state, as I understand it, your office was also notified early on after this spill. When did the state find out? What was your initial response?
Sure. The state found out about the spill Saturday morning, so shortly after the spill occurred. We had both a report come in for Casella, and then we sent we have a spill response team was available and was on site. You know, our understanding and our observations are consistent with what Mr. Casella said. It basically was largely contained. There was no discharge offsite or to surface waters. And that that basically the work was completed shortly after the release, in fact, occurred. And then we had a larger group of state inspectors go to the site the next business day, so on Monday the 26th, to conduct a larger sort of review of both the spill release and the treatment system. You know, our full investigation over what took place that day is still ongoing, but generally speaking, you know, what Mr. Casella said in our investigation are consistent.
John, was anybody there at the time of the spill?
So the facility, there was no one at the facility, but the facility has our employees and vendors going in and out. And during that Saturday morning, the normal transportation folks were there moving leachate, and that's how it was discovered.
Mm. Now,
ordinary course of business, we have people at the facility throughout, certainly throughout the weekend, not 100% of the time, but throughout the weekend, off and on, there are people at the facility.
Hmm. Do you have any plans in the future to, you know, as you look closely and critically at this leachate treatment system that's in place to staff 24/7?
That's a great question, Michaela. I think that, you know, obviously, as you're evolving from an innovation and technology perspective, you learn things. And, you know, certainly there are things that we could do differently. There's no question that we will come out of this with a clear understanding of where the malfunction was, what's necessary to fix it. And then, you know, the other piece of that obviously will be an evaluation of what more staffing should we have? Do we need more staffing? So those are the kinds of things that we will look at based on the results of the analysis of the problem.
Mm. Now, as we've discussed, this plan to remove PFAS from leachate has been something that Casella and the state have been working on together for some time now. But in the wake of this malfunction, environmental groups have been saying that this specific project didn't go through the correct process. Now, I want to get both of your thoughts on a comment here from Nora Bosworth, who you both know. She's the new Northern New England staff attorney for the Zero Waste Project, which is part of the Conservation Law Foundation. We spoke yesterday. Here's what she said.
The terms of Casella's permit were clear in that they were not supposed to run the treatment system without their plan for the system being reviewed and approved, with the opportunity for full public input. The Agency of Natural Resources required Casella to pilot a system in the first place to get PFAS out of their leachate, which we have always commended the agency for and which we think is incredibly important. But the agency's requirement said that the system would be operated in accordance with the approved plan, and that plan was never approved when Casella started running the system, apparently under a tent.
Matt Chapman, what's your response there?
So, I mean, I think as a part of our investigation into what happened at the facility with the accident and release of leachate, we're doing a careful review of the permits that are out there and whether all the obligations and requirements have been met. That review is ongoing, and I don't have anything to really talk about in detail today.
Mm. Do you know when that review will be complete?
I'm happy. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Matt, I'm just curious about the timeline for that review process.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we're sort of doing it's sort of a two-step process, right? So we're looking at both what the causes of the failure or accident that led to the release were, and then also whether there were any permit violations and or whether there's a need, frankly, for much as Mr. Casella is looking to see whether there's operational changes that that from a business perspective he feels are needed. We're also looking at from a regulatory agency perspective as to whether there may be additional requirements that may be necessary.
Mm. And John, you had a comment as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say that we believe we have our permits. We have our solid waste permit. We have our Act 250 permit relative to the pretreatment. The pilot program that Matt is talking about has not been, we don't have the permit for the final pilot program and the final program to go forward. But we have a permit, and that permit from a wastewater treatment standpoint is to take material to Vermont facilities. Our ability to pre-treat, in our view, is part of our permits that were issued in terms of the solid waste permit and the 250 permit.
Hmm. Well, one thing that we should also drive home John, yes?
I was just going to say, I think that while there's, you know, there is a question with regard to the pilot program, we were not precluded in our view for our ability to move forward and try to pre-treat and remove the PFAS that was going to other treatment facilities that we're working with as well, not only Vermont facilities, but that's really the subtlety of the discussion.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that one thing that I want to reiterate that, John, you actually first brought up earlier is that there's only a couple states that are working on projects like this right now. We're kind of in the early stages of figuring out how to remove PFAS in the first place from products and treat them or remove them from leachate once they're already out there in the world. Matt, I'm wondering if you could speak to that a bit about kind of where we are in our learning about PFAS and kind of where Vermont is compared to the rest of the country in terms of our response.
Sure. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's worthwhile to just take a step back and, you know, especially for listeners who don't live every day in the world of PFAS, just to explain what it is we're talking about and where it comes from and some of the challenges we face as a regulatory agency.
Let's do it.
So, you know, PFASs are a class of chemicals that are used in a lot of different commercial and industrial applications. They're used for their like waterproofing and stain resistant properties. And they're also incredibly thermally and chemically stable. They're used in things like putting the waterproofing on your coats, putting the stain guards on furniture and carpeting. They're used in electronic applications and a lot of renewable energy technologies that are important, like heat pumps and battery storage. From an environmental perspective, PFASs are incredibly mobile when they get into the environment. They're persistent, meaning they don't break down quickly, and they accumulate in the environment. From a human health perspective, PFASs affect the human immune system, your hormone system. They increase cholesterol and obesity, and they also increase risk for certain cancers, including prostate, testicular, and kidney cancers, and cause low birth weight in children. The other thing that we're finding is that PFASs are harmful at incredibly low levels in the 4 parts per trillion range. Just to give, again, sort of some perspective, and I like sort of talking about PFASs, I think it's good to give some context. So there are like approximately 12 to 14,000 PFASs used in commerce. We have the ability in laboratories to sample for approximately 40 of those 14,000. And the United States Environmental Protection Agency has an appreciation of the health effects associated with about 10 of those PFASs. So it's commerce and industry and the chemical manufacturing world have gotten sort of far ahead of where the environmental regulatory agencies are with respect to how to manage and deal with some of these chemicals. I think with respect to the landfill and leachate specifically, I mean, we identified that leachate was a challenge or a potential source of PFAS almost when the state started our regulatory efforts with respect to PFAS in around 2016. And we've worked with Casella, and Casella has provided us some valuable information on where PFAS comes from. I mean, you said it's runoff, but really leachate is water that's passed through the trash that we generate that ends up collected on their liner and then put in a storage tank. So a lot of this PFAS is coming from those clothing and rugs and food packaging that we dispose of in the landfill. Neither the United States Environmental Protection Agency or the state of Vermont we don't have numeric standards for how we manage PFAS in a wastewater discharge perspective. So there's not sort of a end of pipe number that we can sample for to tell a wastewater treatment facility or a landfill whether they're meeting the standard. And that's part of the study that Mr. Casella is doing. Some of the data that they're collecting is going to help the state of Vermont develop what's called a technology-based effluent limitation, or basically have us develop a technology approach for landfills on how they pre-treat their waste before it gets discharged to a wastewater treatment facility.
We just received an email with a question for you, John. Lori from Franconia, New Hampshire writes, what did your company learn from the leachate spill of 154,000 gallons at the NCES landfill, which is in Bethlehem, New Hampshire, in May of 2021? Any of the things that you learned watching what happened there impactful to your work at the landfill that you operate in Vermont today?
That's a great question. We learned quite a bit about a very different set of equipment at the North Country facility. It's really very different in terms of the actual treatment that we're doing in Coventry versus the North Country facility. But again, even with the North Country facility, nothing left the site, and it was contained on site, and the secondary containment was very positive. So I think that the one thing that's really missing is, rather than opposition, creating fear and creating, noise and some of the things that, raise money and do all of those things, it would be nice to have some cooperation to see if we couldn't move the process forward. We've had all kinds of opposition for us trying to move forward using innovation and technology to solve this problem. We don't create PFAS. The landfill doesn't create it. It's in everything that we all buy, consumers buy. It's in the landfill in a big way. And we're really out in front, spending millions of dollars to be in the forefront from an innovation standpoint to try to solve this problem. Certainly as it relates to our leachate going to municipal sewage treatment facilities that don't have the capability to treat it. So I think that, it's clear from our perspective that our team is doing a great job. We're really proud of the work that we're doing, and we're proud to be a part of the solution for this issue for not only Vermont, but for the rest of the nation as well. I think the information that we are going to have is going to be helpful in terms of not only in Vermont, but nationally to solve the issue.
John, I hear maybe some frustration with environmental activists who as you're saying, whose work is maybe slowing down the innovation that you see happening at the landfill? Is that accurate?
I think that's a fair perspective, yeah. I think that, from a permitting standpoint, anything that we try to do from an innovation and technology standpoint is slowed down by that process, rather than really looking at the process, trying to understand exactly what we're trying to do and be a part of the solution.
Well, not to pull a Maury Povich on everybody, but we do have a caller who I know you've interacted with, John. Peggy, I recognize your name. Peggy is calling in from Charleston with, I believe, the organization DUMP. Peggy, you'll have to remind me of what that acronym stands for. What's your question or your comment?
Hi, Michaela, and hello, Mr. Casella, Mr. Chapman. I'm Peggy Stevens, and I am a member of DUMP, which is short for Don't Undermine Memphis-Magog's Purity. And I hope to disabuse you of the notion that DUMP is trying to stand in the way of progress here, especially when it comes to the treatment of leachate. I'm really happy to hear you both in agreement that there's no question about how dangerous PFAS chemicals are to environmental and human health and why it's so essential to figure out how to safely filter PFAS. But it's really important, and what we in DUMP are always pressing for is that the most effective technology is used in the safest possible way to protect the health and safety, not only of the public, but certainly of our environment as well. And we're just not there yet. And the accidental spill on February 24th, due to a system malfunction, was completely predictable, preventable, and it really should never have happened. We spoke at the public hearing in December about the leachate permit, the one that has not yet been issued, and in addition to questioning why the system was fully operational at that point without a permit, we also reminded the DEC about the leachate spill that was referenced just previously in Bethlehem, and the situation there is the same as the one that occurred mm-hmm. on the 24th of February in Coventry, which is that the there was no one on duty, and your plan calls for staffing only 8 hours a day, Monday to Friday, and 2 hours on the weekend when you're operating at a 24/7 pace. This is just kind of insane.
I'm going to jump in there, Peggy, I'm going to jump in because I would like John to have the chance to respond. You brought up a number of points. John, go ahead.
I think that, again, as I said before, treating leachate and the leachate spill at North Country are two different things. Certainly, coming out of this, as I said early in the conversation, there are things that we'll learn, and there may very well be one of the things that can be done is staffing when the facility is operating. That's something that we should look at and consider. But we need to first understand exactly what the malfunction was and make sure that that's fixed as well. But certainly, we should come out of this with a better understanding of some of the risks that are associated with the technology. That's exactly the reason for moving forward and putting the technology in place, is to begin to really understand the risks associated with it. But the point of the matter is, there's nothing from an innovation technology standpoint that is without risks. So in order to move forward, there are risks that have to be taken. Yes, I think we all need to learn from those issues and account for them on a go forward basis.
And Peggy, well, we have you on the line since we're also joined right now by Matt Chapman with the state. What do you want to see the state do differently to re-earn the confidences of people who work for organizations like yours, people who live in the area and are concerned about the effects of the landfill on the environment?
Right, and it's not just people and organizations. It is a large part of the population of Vermont is really concerned about this issue. So I guess, speaking to what John just said, the fact that there are risks associated is exactly why, when a permit is issued, that it should require that the system be fully staffed 24/7. I also think there were certain recommendations that were made by a third-party consultant last June, recommendations for revision to the plan that would have improved the safety and effectiveness of the treatment process, and those were turned down by NewsVT last October. And I think that this is just not the appropriate time or place to be ignoring science, cutting corners, cutting costs, when we're dealing with such highly toxic PFAS chemicals.
Thank you so much, Peggy, for calling in. Matt Chapman, I'm wondering if you could speak to Peggy's last concern there.
To that as well, Michaela. 7 million gallons have been treated appropriately. Mm-hmm. And certainly we'll learn from the process, but the amount of data that we have is a clear indication of the success of treating 7 million gallons.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Matt, I would love for you to weigh in as well.
Sure. I mean, just to amplify what Mr. Scicella said, I mean, there's been the treatment system itself is highly effective. I mean, we're seeing PFAS reduction rates on most of the PFAS contaminants, you know, in the upper 90 percentile range of reduction. So we're seeing a really effective system. And I think that what you have here is an accident, right? And so we are going to take a look at this, see whether what we can learn to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again, and look at ways that we can improve sort of either the regulatory or staffing context around this. But I mean, to go back to Peggy's comment, I mean, we value public input, but we also live in a regulatory context where we try to make sure that we listen to what the public has to say, look at the science that is out there, and look at what our regulations are and make the best permitting decisions that we can. And we do the best job we can do to try to do that.
And Matt, I think some folks might be listening to this and wondering what role a regular Vermonter out there in the world can play in trying to reduce PFAS in our system. We've talked only just a bit about reducing waste in the state. I know that a couple years ago, the state created this big plan to reduce the amount of total waste generated by, I think it was by 10% by 2024, starting in 2019. Has that happened?
Well, I mean, so we have seen reductions in our the generation of waste in Vermont. We've come a long ways in putting a lot of pace to reduce a number of waste streams. I think the problem is that the pie keeps getting bigger, right? Like the amount of total waste that's generated because of the way we live our lives as consumers is increasing the amount of waste that's generated generally. And so we've had a lot of progress and there's a lot more work to do. I think, you know, from my perspective as a regulator who deals with PFAS related issues, you know, I think there's a role for the state for working with other states in the region and then also nationally to try and phase out and restrict PFAS use in consumer products. I mean, I think it's something that we've identified internally in the agency as being a high priority of something that we need to do. And I actually am working regionally with other states in New England, but we're also looking for federal leadership on trying to phase out PFAS where we can phase it out, where there are other alternatives and you don't need to use it.
Hmm. Well, let's take a couple more calls while we have both of you. Roger in Colchester is on the line. Roger, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. I appreciate everybody's hard work in this area and stuff. My question would be, why does the state continually put these landfills close to fresh bodies of water and doesn't isolate them in sandy soils or places where the soils would protect the fresh bodies of water that we have? Hence, the landfill is over, I think, near Waterbury, the one in Williston, and again, this one on top of a pristine lake, meant for Magog. Why is that landfill even there? Thanks. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Roger. Matt, we'll start with you.
Sure. I mean, so we have siting requirements for landfills. They're not sort of geographically, I mean, it requires they be set away from waters and wetlands and away from properties and such. You know, this particular landfill from a soils and geology perspective is fairly well sited. There's a fairly deep distance between where the landfill is at and groundwater, which is one of the major concerns that we have. And it actually is also sited at a of the location of a previous sort of local landfill. So you're basically using land that was historically used as a landfill to build a new landfill on. The landfill's been in operation for a while, so we weren't personally involved in the siting of it, but those are some of the reasons why this site, I think, was selected. And John may be able to say more about that.
John.
Yeah, I mean, I think the landfill goes back to unlined facilities that back to point in time when there were 78 unlined landfills in the state of Vermont, most of which were leaking into groundwater. This facility was actually developed by five Canadian partners on the existing site, and they built the first line cell there a long, long time ago. I can't remember now exactly how long ago it was, but as Matt said, landfills, you know, historically land use was established, truck traffic, et cetera. And obviously that's changed over time. But the facility was right when it began being permitted as a line facility. A lot of the landfills had already closed in the state of Vermont. There was only a few that were left open at that point in time. So it is a very good site from a hydrogeologic standpoint. It's got the right soils. And as I said before, the team has done Jeremy, the entire team there has done a really good job moving the issue forward in terms of treating leachate and managing the facility in an appropriate manner. It doesn't, it also doesn't preclude learning from, you know, some of the things that happen when you're in, you know, the pretreatment stages. It's a new technology. There's no question that we'll come out of it and we'll learn from it and we'll improve the process on a go forward basis.
Let's get in one more question here. This one looks like it's for Matt from Lindy in Barton. Lindy asks, why does Vermont want to be the experimental guinea pig for removing PFAS from landfill leachate? Lindy, I assume, is referring to the fact that Vermont is one of just a few states that has pilot programs like this in place. Matt?
Sure. I mean, I think that removing PFAS, let me sort of back up. I mean, what we're really concerned about is PFAS discharging to surface waters in the state. And so one of our goals is to sort of look upstream from our wastewater treatment facilities to see who's discharging PFAS into that wastewater treatment facility and whether we can use technology to remove that PFAS before it ever gets to the wastewater treatment facility, because our wastewater treatment facilities aren't designed to remove PFAS, right? So we look to people like Casella or other industrial manufacturers to place treatment on their facilities before it ever reaches the wastewater treatment facility where it's ultimately discharged to surface waters.
Well, we are going to have to wrap up this conversation here. Many more questions to return to in the future, though. I'm so appreciative of both of our guests for joining us today, John Casella with Casella Waste Systems. John, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Michaela.
We're also joined by Matt Chapman, the director of the Waste Management and Prevention Division in the Department of Environmental Conservation. Matt, thank you as well.